make decisions under terrible circumstances.
Yes, call Jen.
Mr. Une agreed wholeheartedly, clasping his hands to his head and touching his forehead repeatedly as he backed away.
Very true, indeed.
Shay noticed her grandfather's head beginning to droop.
Kianla, she said, take grandfather home. Hilo and I will be along later.
Kianla dabbed Call Sen's mouth with a napkin and moved him back from the table. People fell silent for a moment as the wheelchair passed through the dining room. Some raised their clasped hands in respectful salute to the old torch. When Call Sen and his nurse had gone, several people rose at one time from their seats and came to where Hilo and Shay sat.
Call Jens, we live near the Twice Lucky, and it's our favorite place to eat. But we never came here while those dogs held it, said Mr. Ake, father of two fingers. We're so relieved there's peace in the neighborhood again.
A couple, Mr. and Mrs. Kino, whom Shay recognized as luckbringers in her office, slipped an envelope under her plate.
To assist Mr. Une with his tribute this month, they explained. We know the clan will help him with the damages to the windows and the carpet.
A palpable current of relief was growing in the dining room, where the ceiling fans spun through the muggy air blown in over the harbor where Ken and his men patrolled. The patrons of the Twice Lucky had seen the restaurant owner's bandaged head, and they saw now the box sitting next to Hilo on the table, and were comforted that the pillar was merciful and had renewed his endorsement. With the solidified confidence of the clan's lantern men and the jade income from the Aspenians, Shay allowed herself a stir of grim optimism. Perhaps Ait's ruthless vision, one clan over John Loon, would come to pass, but not, Shay vowed, in the way the pillar of the mountain envisioned. Hilo accepted all the respect paying with something approaching his usual relaxed good humor. Presently, he said, please go enjoy your food. My sister and I have business to discuss. And the impromptu line of clan loyalists dispersed and returned to their tables. The pillar and his weatherman were left alone to finish their meals and to speak on clan matters. Epilogue. Always opportunity. There'd been a man at the gravesite when Barrow first went, a young man who stayed there a long time. But the second time Barrow snuck into the cemetery with Moot, it was at night, and the eerie hillside was empty. He found the right place easily enough. Due to space considerations, most Kekanese were cremated and their ashes entombed. Not many families were afforded full burial plots and large marble monuments. Call Lanshinwan had been laid to rest near his war hero father. Bouquets of spring flowers, bowls of bright waxed fruit, and sticks of burnt down incense in small cups of sand had been left at the foot of the headstone by the clan faithful. Below the name and dates carved into the marble, there were only two simple lines. Beloved son and brother, pillar of his clan. With a violent motion, Moot spat on the grave and made to kick over the items on the ground. Barrow yanked him back and hissed,
don't be an idiot. You want them to start guarding this place?
The boy pulled away from Barrow's grasp, but stopped trying to do damage. He stuffed his hands into his pockets and glanced around the moonlit cemetery with sullen unease. Grave robbing was, after all, punishable by death. Barrow crouched down and ran his hands along the base of the monument. He pressed his palms to the grassy earth and brought his cheek so close to the ground he could smell the pungent odor of the moist dirt beneath the growing turf. Several feet below him lay the body of the man he'd killed, and Barrow was certain that buried with him was jade. Jade that belonged by right to Barrow. Now that he had the entire stash of shine safely stored away, and the clan war had ebbed so John Loon was almost, it seemed for now, back to normal. He could think on how to make his luck again. There was always opportunity in this city. This has been a Hachette Audio production of Jade City, The Greenbone Saga, Book 1. Written by Fonda Lee. Read by Andrew Cascino. Produced and directed by Dennis Kao. Audio edited by Sean Bolter. Mixing and mastering by Jeremy Wesley. Production supervised by Lisa Kahn. Jade City is also available in print and digital formats from Orbit, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2017 by Fonda Lee. Audio production copyright 2017 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without permission of the publisher constitutes unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.